Again, I grew up in a time when boxing was a big thing to watch. The days of Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman. So I really like boxing. And I'm not much for watching TV, but I am going to watch both of those events today. This fight has really been hyped up, and the amount of money associated with it is just crazy. Estimates are, at this point, the fight will bring in around $400 million. Mayweather is looking at getting about $120 million of that, and Pacquiao around $80. So this kind of matchup and that kind of money really brings out the emotional side of people. Some people get wound up about these things. They get very emotional, and when that happens, people can say dumb things. As a matter of fact, there was a reporter from the Daily Mail, a gentleman by the name of Jeff Powell. He actually made the comment, and this is his comment. "We're at the point where Manny could beat him," referring to Mayweather, "with his right arm tied behind his back." Now, that's a pretty ridiculous thing to say, but Solomon's wisdom tells us that's the way people are. He says in Proverbs 29:11, "A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back." I'm sure we've all had those times where we've said something and wish we never had at that moment. You wish you could turn back time and retract what you said. We've all had those moments. You say something from an emotional response that you wish later, or even the next second, you could take back. But once it's spoken, it's impossible to retract it. It's already out there. There's no taking it back. Whoever's listening or whoever you were talking to has heard it. You can try and apologize, but that never really helps. And it's probably not going to solve things. There's really no way to know. Once you've vented those feelings, they're out there. They get to be analyzed and criticized by whoever. And like a recording, whoever's affected by what you say will just keep playing it back over and over in their heads. We do that ourselves. The problem is that whenever what is said is based on emotions and your feelings, it probably wasn't a particularly wise statement. That's why Solomon says the foolish person is the one who vents their feelings. But he says the wise man holds them back. We can express our feelings but not vent, like Solomon says. The people that are venting are the ones he says are foolish. And we live in a culture that has elevated people's feelings above wisdom. So, I mean, who can forget things like Howard Dean's outburst in the 2004 presidential campaign, the Dean scream? He ruined any chance he had of becoming a president. And Hillary's comment with regards to the Benghazi thing, you know, the whole, at this point, what difference does it make? But that doesn't seem to be affecting her at this point. We'll see what happens. A lot of examples like that. They're hard to recover from. Those are the kind of moments that Solomon's talking about. In today's world, where everyone has a video phone and everything's captured on video, it's even more important to be careful about what you say. Even if it isn't an emotional reaction to something, but it's something that can be used against you, it probably will. Things said in an emotional state are hard to recover from. Don't let it be your downfall. It's the wise person that learns to hold back their feelings. It takes discipline to control both your feelings and your tongue. That's why we need the wisdom of Solomon, so we can avoid being the fool that vents and instead be the wise man that holds his feelings back. So as big as the fight is today, don't get all emotional about it. You can be passionate without being foolish. For me, I'll take the wise approach and hold my feelings about it and any predictions on the outcome, at least maybe until the end of the show. But that doesn't mean you can't call in and give us your view on the fight, foolish venting, or the upcoming stories. Oscar and I need somebody to talk to. Fred's out this week. So call us, 520-750-7456, after this commercial, though. You'll have to hold back a little. We'll be right back. Solomon on Blast, Power Talk 1210. I think we have our technical difficulties worked out. So back on the normal mic. Hopefully this sounds a lot better. I think that theme song there, Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, should be the mayor of Baltimore's theme song. Proverbs 28:16 says, a ruler who lacks understanding is a great oppressor. And that pretty much sums it up for the past week in Baltimore after the mayor's comments. Sure, I'm sure most everybody's heard them, but if you haven't because you've been too busy focusing on other things, well, we have a quick clip, and so you can kind of get the context of what we're talking about here. This happened last Saturday after the funeral of the gentleman that was killed, and I'm just waiting for Oscar to get my clip ready here, so obviously I'm stalling, but we're just waiting for the clip to get ready. But there's been a lot going on there in Baltimore, and a lot of it, I think, has to do with the comments that the mayor made last week. Do you have the comments? Here we go.
Worked with the police and instructed them to do everything that they could to make sure that the protesters were able to exercise their right to free speech. It's a very delicate balancing act, because while we tried to make sure that they were protected from the cars and the other, you know, things that were going on, we also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well. I never said, nor would I.
Okay, so there's her comments. She made, like I said, she says that we wanted to give. All right, hold on. Man, we are having the crazy technical problems here. Stuff just pops up on the computer whenever you are least expecting it. All those ads and everything. I don't know what that was. Oscar over there playing the violin or something. Anyways, she made the comment, it's a very delicate balancing act. We want to protect people. We also give those who wish to destroy space to do that as well. Well, that's really the comment that has created all the problems that have gone on since then. And I think part of the problem you have is she didn't really consider her audience when she spoke. And I don't think the media, even though they've reacted and said that she was, her comments were taken out of context, and she actually said that. I think in the rest of that clip, she makes that comment that she was even misquoted. This was on Monday.
I never said, nor would I ever say, that we are giving people space to destroy our city. So my words should not be twisted.
So she stated her words were twisted. Well, I think the problem is, whether she was misquoted or not, the audience that she was directing comments to was really pretty much everybody in that city and around the country, because by the time those comments got distributed, everybody knew what she said. And I would have to say that a lot of those young kids that were out there rioting, throwing rocks at the police and whatnot, they heard what they heard. You've got kids that are high on hormones, adolescents, and everything else, and they're not going to take the time to logically evaluate the comments that she made after the fact. They heard one thing: give them space to destroy. That's all they heard.
Try to make sure that they were protected from the cars and the other, you know, things that were going on. We also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well. I never said, nor would I ever say, that we are giving people space to destroy ourselves.
So, yeah, there's the commentary. And as a juvenile, as somebody that's looking for anything to do to entertain themselves at times, that's pretty much all they heard, whether it was however she meant it. That's all they heard. And I think that's really where the problem lies, is that the audience that she was addressing was everybody. And given that this is a mayor of a city that's probably just a little bit bigger than Tucson, she probably hasn't had a lot of national audience and a lot of national attention. And in making these comments, she probably wasn't really used to the aspect that everybody's going to hear this thing. When you look at the fact that when she was elected, the city has over 600,000 people in it. I imagine probably at least a third of those, so a couple hundred thousand, are probably registered voters. When she got elected, 40,125 votes is what she received in the general election. So I would say most people don't even know, or prior to this, didn't even know who the mayor of Baltimore was. And all they heard were comments on TV, social media, that said, give them space to destroy. And that's how these kids reacted. And this is an instance where there's not going to be any way of taking those words back. Like I said in the beginning, she misspoke, but those kids heard what they heard, and you're not talking about kids that are thinking logically. It definitely had an impact that she couldn't control. And I think when the media is pretty much all along the same lines of evaluating it from a logical point of view, understanding what she really meant, taking the time after the fact to reevaluate it, but those people that were out there protesting weren't doing that. And the worst thing was, then she had to turn around and apologize again a second time because she made comments referring to them as thugs. So she's beginning to learn, unfortunately, under fire, that what you say has consequences. She took back her comments this would have been on Thursday. Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlins Blake took back her comments calling protesters thugs, saying she used the wrong words in the heat of the moment. And that's pretty much what Solomon was talking about. She said, I wanted to clarify my comments on thugs. When you speak out of frustration and anger, one can say things in a way that you don't mean, she said on Twitter. That night, we saw misguided young people who need to be held accountable, but also who need support. And my comments then didn't convey that. So everybody's saying that her and others who have used the word to describe the protesters, including the president, Obama said that, they're being insensitive. The episode also underscores the fine line she's walking in this community that is largely black. It's somewhere around 63% of the people in the city are black. So she seems to be kind of out of touch with the city's poor people. She was obviously a very, very intelligent person because she's been through law school. She's achieved a lot at a very young age. But the problem is, as Solomon so aptly says, it's the fool that vents that creates all the problems. And somebody that is wise is going to take the time to hold back before they make comments like that. So when it comes to this situation in Baltimore, it seems to be very over the top, and it's spreading out into a lot of other places in the country. But one of the things I've noticed is that really, when you look at these kind of riots that occur, most of the time, if not all the time, they're happening in urban areas. Riots don't happen in the suburbs. Riots don't happen out in the rural areas. And a lot of it has to do with the conditions that exist in these urban areas. And everybody gets upset about them, but, you know, they set fires, the people steal, and they last for a little while. The police come in, National Guard comes in, people get arrested. Nobody really goes to jail for more than a few days with regards to these things. people protest that they won't put up with it. You see these going on now across the country. But in reality, they do end up putting up with it because in a couple weeks, things will be back to normal. And people will go back to doing the same thing over and over again. And when there's only 40,000 people in a city of 600,000 voting for the mayor, obviously most of the people in those cities really don't care about who their elected officials are, what changes come about within those cities. And you'll constantly end up with somebody that's going to say something foolish in the middle of the heat of the moment, venting, and not being able to retract what they said because everybody's going to hear whatever they said in a different way. And I think that's kind of the thing that's going on here. And typically, you don't see these riots spread out beyond the urban areas. Police do manage to finally come in this situation. After a couple days, they finally called the National Guard. They called the police in to do it, to really shut things down. And in reality, they could have done that a lot sooner and in a lot more aggressive manner. But I think most of the time they know they can let these things go to a certain extent and that eventually they'll die out. I mean, I can imagine seeing the National Guard show up. They make an announcement that in 2 minutes, they're going to start shooting people when this rioting starts. That's actually, I think, kind of how the term reading the riot act came about. Was that was how they handled riots. They gave them a little bit of heads up that said, in 2 minutes, we're going to start shooting anybody that's committing crimes. And when they did start, there might be a few people that end up shot at the beginning, but it quells a riot pretty quickly. But then nowadays, it's considered excessive force, and so they let it go on. It cost a few burnt buildings in a city that was already fairly largely a lot of vacant buildings that the city owned, and the problem continues. They arrest the people, tear gas some of them, but in the end, everybody just goes back to doing what they were doing after a few days, and nothing really changes. So it'll continue. If we look back not too long ago, LA riots, same kind of thing happened. Ferguson happened. It goes on, but it's always isolated to these urban cities. So maybe the thought is that kind of avoid the urban areas. Live out in the suburbs.
Well, there's just more friction there. I mean,
absolutely.
So you see more people and they have more contact with police.
Yeah. And the media will say, well, it's their economic situation. It's their poverty that's causing this problem. But I think the real poverty that's causing the problem is moral poverty. That's where it really lies. Not having a moral basis to not do these kind of things.
Well, it's like you said, I feel like the rioters know that they're going to get in, they're going to loot, and then the government's going to come in and clean. And
everything will go back to where
it'll be
was.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back after these breaks with more of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210.
Joy that is hard to hide. Then sometimes it seems all I have to do is worry. Then you're bound to see my other side. I'm just a soul whose intentions are love. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Soft in the middle now.
Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Mr. Beer Belly, Beer Belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al.
All right, we're back. Power Talk 1210, Solomon on blast here. You can call me Al, at least that's what Paul Simon says. Well, Proverbs 21:24, Solomon says, a proud and haughty man, scoffer is his name. He acts with arrogant pride. And just to lighten things up a little bit, this article that I ran across, what would you expect, Oscar, would be one of the fastest growing, fastest rising baby names for American boys today?
Fastest, like in use, you mean?
Yeah, what's coming up as one of the most used baby names?
I would have to say
fast rising.
Rupert, I would have to say.
No, it's actually, according to this article, Messiah and King are among the fastest rising baby names.
Well, that's interesting.
There's some high expectation there, according to this article. Those two names, King and Messiah, are among the fastest rising. They're just a little bit behind Major, a boy's name that jumped the most spots on the Social Security Administration's annual list of popular baby names. Jacob is the most popular for boys, and Sophia is in the top for the girls. But for some reason, the name Messiah and King are ones that are rising pretty fast. And it says, Americans have long given their children aggrandizing names. He says that Noble and General were on the list of popular names for much of the 20th century, though they never got into the top 100. And they've pretty much run out of the presidential names. So they're going to names like King and Messiah. On the girls' side, it says Chastity was top 1,000 for more than two decades before dropping off the list. Justice was on the list in the 1880s, but fell off for more than 100 years. But then it reappeared again in 1992. Jacob's popularity, they say, endures because the name has much of what parents look for in a baby's name. It's easy to pronounce. Okay, I guess that's pretty important because you wouldn't want to not be able to pronounce your own child's name. It's easy to spell, which in today's day and age with public education, that's probably pretty important also. And they say it's a solid manly name, and it's a biblical name, and biblical names are always in style. On the girl's side, Sophia first cracked into the top 100 in 1997. Isabella dropped off the list for a while from 1949 to 1990. And a lot of times they say when you put these kind of names, give your children these kind of names, it puts a lot of undue pressure on the child when they have to live up to the name, especially something like the name Messiah. So you can go out there to the Social Security Administration's website. They provide a list of the top 1,000 baby names for every year dating all the way back to 1880. And the top baby name for men or for boys has been John. It's actually down on the list a little bit now. And the other one is for girls, it's Mary. And then you can go in there and see by state what people within each of the states are calling their kids as they are born. Let's see, some of the other crazy names that people will put out there. Gael, just Jace.
G-A-E-L,
Gael, yeah. Jace, like I said, Messiah, Brantley. Messiah had gained 246 spots. It was all the way up to number 387.
But what do you call somebody named Messiah?
I You call him Messiah.
Messi?
That's part of this is that...
Mimo?
Yeah. There were a lot of these names come out of the popularity of them seem to kind of ebb and flow with whatever popular television shows are out there. But one of the things that came out because of this whole Messiah name is that there was actually a judge in Tennessee that forced the parents of a child that they had named Messiah to change the child's name. The 7-month-old boy's name was forced to be changed from Messiah to Martin by this judge. And the judges in Tennessee, she was a child support magistrate, Lou Ann Ballou. She ordered the name changed. The boy's parents were in court because they could not agree on the child's last name. But when the judge heard the boy's first name, she ordered it changed too. She said that it could put him at odds with a lot of people. And at this point, he has had no choice in what his name is. It was the first time she'd ordered a first name change, though. And like I say, it was actually number 4 among the fastest rising baby names in 2012. So she'd required that the baby be named Martin Deshaun McAuliffe, which included both parents' last names. The boy's mother said she would appeal. She says Messiah is unique, and she liked how it sounded alongside the boy's 2 siblings, which she had named Micah and Mason. Micah, Mason, and Messiah. Okay.
I think people just don't know what it means. Like, you're getting to the point that they just hear it like Messiah. Oh, that sounds cool.
And they don't really understand the real basis for that word and the what it really means. And that could very well be, given that we live in a very post-Christian culture that doesn't seem to want to admit the fact that there is something behind a name.
But that article said that there was people in the 20th century named General. Have you ever met a general, ever?
No, I've never met anybody.
I bet you most of those people change their name when they get to...
Well, yeah. So it's probably not the wisest thing to do, to call your kids really crazy names.
Name them Doctor.
Yeah. And I did know somebody by the name of Doctor.
That was her first name?
Yes.
Doc, you can just call him Doc.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it, I think, has to do with the pride that people have in their lives. And that's why I say it. Solomon's comment, a proud and haughty man, scoffer is his name, and he acts with arrogant pride. And I think that's what you see in these cases, that that's how people are.
Well, it sets expectations high,
right?
You know, too early.
And the mother, she says in this article, everybody believes what they want, so I think I should be able to name my child what I want to name him, not someone else. But they were going to court to fight over what name they were going to have the last name of the child. The judge said the name Messiah could actually cause problems if the child grows up in Cock County, which is in Tennessee, because it has a large Christian population. The judge actually made the statement, the word Messiah is a title, and it's a title that has only been earned by one person, and that one person is Jesus Christ. So at least the judge knew what she was talking about, whether these parents did or not. So what you say and what you name somebody will have a lot of significance. We'll be right back with more Solomon on Blast.
A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you baby.
Uh-huh.
All right, we're back here on Solomon on Blast, Power Talk 1210. In this next story, Proverbs 15:4, a wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit, is what Solomon says. There's a significant darkness surrounding this particular area of the country, and if you haven't heard about this, it is pretty disturbing. There's a wave of 200 teen suicides within the past 4 months, or actually between December and March, in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Now, you might know of Pine Ridge from the Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, and the Wounded Knee episode that occurred back in the late 1800s. It's the home of the Oglala Lakota tribe. And the problem is that there seems to be a very spiritual battle going on there. Between December and March, more than 200 teenagers on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota either committed suicide or tried to. This is beyond anything we've ever seen. It's almost like serial suicides, stated Ron Hutchcraft of Ron Hutchcraft Ministries. He says this is not just a psychological issue. This is a spiritual battle with spiritual forces. He says you've got 12-year-old girls hanging themselves. You can't imagine a 12-year-old deciding to die when they haven't even lived yet. Bodies were probably one of the things. Lost my train of thought there. Anyways, in this particular area of the country, it says infant mortality is 300 times the national average. Nearly everyone, 90% of the population in Pine Ridge, is living below the national poverty line. According to the current USDA rural development documents, the Lakota have the lowest life expectancy of any group in America. And at least 60% of the homes on the reservation are invested with black mold. It's a devastation that these residents face every day. Actually, even though they've had 200 suicides within the last 4 months or so, it says, or attempts, it says it's nothing new. Pine Ridge's suicide rate is 150 times the national average, but its frequency has really started to grab the national attention. The problem is that when you go and look into this, there was actually an article from back in 2010 that discussed the very same problem. And at that point in time, Obama had pledged to improve the lives of the Native Americans there. And so obviously things haven't changed over the last roughly 5 years, because this seems to continue to happen in these areas pretty significant. They indicate that a lot of the things that these kids are feeling and is showing up on Facebook. It says a 13-year-old sixth grader had taken her own life, and somebody else wrote, "My heart's breaking and the day has just begun. It says, "This knife feels so good against my wrist. Ain't nobody care anyway. My life will be better gone as it is." The U.S. Public Health Service is sending mental health counselors to talk to these young kids there in Pine Ridge. But in reality, the gentleman that I started out the article with from this Ron Hutchcraft, he says that it really is a spiritual issue. Many of these young people have talked about an increase in spiritual activity. They call them shadow people or the dark people. He says these are spirit beings, demonic beings that are stalking the reservation and convincing young people that they're worth nothing and that they've started this cloud of death over the reservation. And I would say that in a lot of cases, we don't seem to really believe that in this country anymore, that there are really spiritual aspects, negative spiritual forces out there. But this kind of thing, when you really look into it, it indicates that there really is. We see all these crazy reality shows, ghost hunters and that kind of thing, where people spend a lot of time supposedly chasing ghosts, but I don't think they realize just how real the spiritual side of things are and the impact that opening that door to those kind of forces will have on people. And whether there's something particular about this area of the country or it's just a built-in part of their culture, it has had a significant impact for a great many number of years in that particular area. But I think what you see out of this is that these kids, in their commentation on Facebook and whatnot, that they're not getting words of encouragement from their own parents a lot of times. There's a lot of negativity there. And I think to some extent, this is an example of what happens when people become dependent on government. And the problem is that they seem to have faith in that American government more than they do in God himself. And we should look at this and consider the consequences of what could happen in the rest of the country as people become more and more dependent on government for assistance. These Indian tribes have, for hundreds of years, have had reliance entirely on the government, and this is the kind of situation that you end up seeing happen when that's who their Messiah is. That's who they look to for their substance, their hope, and everything else. Yeah, spiritually, they have nothing but these demonic forces. It opens the door to these kind of things when that's what they're looking for. They say that a lot of these people, the only way out for them is to join the military, and then that way they don't come back. So it is a significant problem, and we need to look at it and understand that it can be something that can happen to the rest of the country when we put that reliance on the government. So if you hadn't heard about it, look into it. Pray for these people. They obviously need prayer when it comes to the spiritual forces that are attacking them. We'll be back after this break. More Solomon Mountain Blast. We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. In our One Greater Than Solomon segment, I had to pick B.B. King, Army of the Lord there, because there's all kinds of craziness out there on the internet, and it was widely reported that B.B. King had died. That is not true. It is a big internet hoax, so don't believe it if you've been following things on Facebook and Twitter. They're not real most of the time. B.B. King is alive and well. Thank God. John 14:23 says, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Well, in this particular story, and with it being May, kind of focusing on the whole end of May Memorial Day thing, and looking at different people that have served our country, and in this particular one, it's about Jeremiah Denton. And maybe some of you remember, maybe some of you that are very young don't remember, but Jeremiah Denton was a prisoner of war during Vietnam. He was actually a commander in the Vietnam War in the Navy, and he was shot down over Vietnam and spent 7 years and 7 months as a prisoner of war, and actually was subjected to 4 years of solitary confinement. He had a book out that's called When Hell Was in Session. He actually passed away last year. And he was elected to the Senate in 1980. He became the first Republican ever elected by popular vote to the U.S. Senate. But he was really famous for sending a message using Morse code with his eyes during a 1966 interview in a Vietnamese prison. He simply blinked the letters to the word torture, T-O-R-T-U-R-E, as he was being interviewed by a Japanese journalist to let the military, U.S. military, know the Vietnamese were torturing him and other prisoners. The significant part about it was that he says that he had been in prison for a long time. He says, I guess at one point, he says, I heard a voice in my cell when I was nearing despair and saying to the Lord, I'm not sure I can go on comporting myself in an honorable fashion. He says, I've just got to have some help. He says, about 5 or 10 seconds after I said that, the only noise I could hear was this man being tortured who was shrieking, and a clear voice came out and said, say, Sacred Heart of Jesus, I give myself to you. Denton explained that he'd been brought up with the phrase in a religious club he once belonged to, so it wasn't entirely foreign to him, but I knew where it was coming from. And he didn't say thee, he said you. And he said, I broke down, cried, and since that time, I've learned that to do that, turn yourself over to God and say, look, be at the origin of things. That's the true strength in a life. So, a little kudos to Jeremiah there. Until